I grew up in a little town in Ontario, which has always been a huge hockey town. The weekends when I was a kid often held a hockey game or two, and over the years there's been a lot of folks who have gone on into the NHL. So I grew up knowing a boy named Vince in this town, and now Vince has a son, Matt, and Matt is a new player for the Colorado Avalanche, and he's a very big deal. So when Colorado plays Toronto or Ottawa, there is a huge crowd of folks from my hometown in the stands cheering this boy on. And if you go to my little town, you're going to find jersey after jersey for sale and on bodies with the number 9 and the name Duchesne sewn on the back. So this little town cares very much about the Stanley Cup, and this whole town will know when he's back in town. And we have on the side of our arena NHLers from this town painted in this massive mural, and his will join there soon, I'm sure. All of these folks who have gone on to the NHL are part of the community. They're all somebody's neighbor, they're all somebody's friend, and they're pretty normal folk. One has been my teacher, one I worked for, one owns a sporting goods store. Anyway, it's life in a small town. So last week we heard the story of another small town. And Jesus, the son of a neighbor, the brother of a friend, the boy who lived just down the road. Jesus has been away, and now, at the beginning of his ministry, he's returned to Nazareth. He went to the synagogue, a place no doubt very familiar to him from childhood, with faces, no doubt, who were very pleased to see him. In this context of home, Jesus, the hometown boy, opened the scroll and read, "The Spirit of the Lord is upon me, because he has anointed me to bring good news to the poor. He has sent me to proclaim release to the captives and recovery of sight to the blind, to let the oppressed go free, to proclaim the year of the Lord's favor." There is significance to the audience of these words being those who at one time knew him very well. These people were not strangers. So in the reading that Owen read today, we hear the reaction of these people to these words. "Isn't this Joseph's son?" So that question, I think, can be weighted in two ways, and Jesus is very aware of this. The question, "Isn't this Joseph's son?" could be a question of genuine wonder and appreciation, pride in the local boy. But the same question could also very well have been asked with a sneer. "Joseph's son? He was nothing special. He's still just a carpenter. He's no more special than we are." Jesus hears this unspoken response and tells those gathered that no doubt they want to see a sign. He makes it fairly clear that this is not what he is going to do, that this is not the place where he will perform for their pleasure a miracle. In fact, he says, God has plans and wonders to perform outside of Nazareth, outside even of Israel. He pushes the circle of God's love wider than they would have thought possible, to include those they never would have thought to include. So his people, the ones who knew him as a child, who played with him, or taught him, maybe scolded him, ate with him, grew up with him, or watched him grow up, they were not slightly disappointed in him. They were not just a bit upset, not even a bit mad. They were filled with rage. Rage. These people, some of whom at one time would have known him and loved him, stood up while still in the synagogue and proceeded to drive Jesus out of his hometown. In fact, they led him to a cliff, one I wonder if he played near or on as a child. They led him there with the intention of throwing him off of it. In this story, Jesus could have walked away from this crowd at any point. At any point in this story. Interesting that he chose to go with the mob as their rage grew, up the hill, right to the edge of the cliff, and then he left them there. So Jesus passed through this crowd and went on his way. Just passed through a mob. It seems like the miracle or sign they had been looking for came in this moment, that in the midst of the mob, Jesus passed through them and went on his way. Ironic that the proof they were grasping for came then, as a result of the hardness of their own hearts, not really as a gift to them, but almost as a sign of his absence. So what is left makes me kind of chuckle. What is left is the image of a crowd of enraged people lingering on a hill with nobody there to throw off. Must have been kind of confusing. So they're ready to throw a former friend and neighbor off the cliff, yet somehow he's just simply gone on his way. And this I find profound. On his way to bring good news to the poor, on his way to proclaim release to the captives, on his way to give sight to the blind, on his way to let the oppressed go free, on his way, healing the sick and embracing the outcast and eating with the sinner. He went on his way. Which leads him, we know, on to Jerusalem, to another crowd, to another hill. This encounter with his own people, their threat to kill him, hints at what is to come at journey's end. He went on his way, knowing the rage of many would build and build until finally his way would end with the violence of the cross. If there's any application for our ears, I wonder if we might find it in the crowd milling in confusion at the edge of this cliff. A crowd of enraged people refusing to listen to the one they know. A crowd of closed people who have hardened their hearts, refusing to hear the good news. A crowd of people grasping for a sign, a miracle. So perhaps we might find ourselves in the hometown crowd, impatient, desperate, envious, resentful. Perhaps there's a part of us unable to hear the words of the one we too have come to know. Perhaps it's possible that we may find ourselves in other crowds as we follow Jesus on the way, on his journey to the cross.